want your business to grow faster? Are you open to new and out-of-the-box ways to drive revenues and increase value? How do you imagine the most successful entrepreneurs and business leaders double, triple, or expand their businesses tenfold or more? This is a weekly podcast featuring conversations with business owners, executives, and leaders as we reveal behind-the-scenes details that give you, our listeners, the confidence to pursue your own deal-driven growth. On the show, we discuss a huge variety of deals, everything from large, complex mergers and acquisitions, capital raising, joint ventures, strategic alliances, real estate, affiliate and sponsorship deals, and more, including smaller deals that you can do without significant capital. My name is Corey Kupfer, and I've been supporting deal-driven growth for businesses for over 35 years as a successful entrepreneur, professional negotiator, and attorney. My goal is to help you strategize, plan for, find, and complete deals that will help your company grow faster. Welcome to the DealQuest podcast. Let's get started. DealQuest community, I'm so excited to introduce you to a remastered episode of the DealQuest podcast. The podcast has grown so much. We started it about 5 years ago now, at least at the point I'm recording this. In the beginning, had maybe 60 or 80 listeners per episode. We now have many multiples of that. In fact, we've got almost 100 times that. And I realized that there were so many great interviews I did early on in the podcast. In fact, in the first year of the podcast, it wasn't even called DealQuest. It was called Fueling Deals until we rebranded it. And we interviewed some amazing, amazing entrepreneurs and deal makers and, you know, just amazing stories, amazing content. And I know that so many of our listeners have joined us over the last several years and may not have heard some of those earlier episodes from 5 years ago, 4 years ago, even 3 years ago. So we have picked the best of the best of those old episodes. And the advice and the stories and the experiences are timeless. So we've remastered them, made sure the audio is great, and put in our new intro and outro and that kind of stuff. And we're going to be re-releasing some of these amazing, amazing episodes. So look out for them from time to time. And here's one coming up right now.
Mike Michalowicz is the author of Profit First, Clockwork, Surge, The Pumpkin Plan, and his newest release, Fix This Next. By his 35th birthday, Mike had founded and sold two companies, one to private equity and the other to Fortune 500. Today, he is running his third multi-million-dollar venture, Profit First Professionals. Mike is a former business columnist for the Wall Street Journal and former business makeover specialist on MSNBC. Over the years, Mike has traveled the globe, speaking with thousands of entrepreneurs, and is here today to share the best of what he has learned. DealQuest listeners, I am so excited to have Mike Michalowicz on the podcast. We've had some really great guests on this podcast, but I got to tell you something. I've been following Mike's work for a while. I don't say that I'm a devotee to many things, but I am a Profits First devotee. I probably turned on 100 people to read his book. Mike, I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Well, Corey, I'm excited to be here. And thanks for spreading the word on Profit First. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, I love all your work, but that's really made a big difference for me. And I coach and mentor a lot of entrepreneurs. And I say, hey, you got to run your business on Profit First. But we hear much more today to talk about, your newer book. So we'll get there. But before we go into that, what you're doing now, I want to take you back. And when you were a little kid growing up, 8, 10, 12 years old, what did you want to be? Because my guess is a serial entrepreneur and best-selling author and, all the stuff you're doing now might not have been on the list at that time, but you tell me.
No, not even close. No, I had a very clear vision. I wanted to be a garbage man. I really did. I still kind of pine to try that out. It looks so cool to hang off the back of a truck and you're throwing stuff around and maybe discovering cool things. You're outside. I missed out on that. But I actually, if there's an opportunity to do a day, if someone says, hey, you can do a run with us for a day, I would love to actually do that.
That's amazing. My grandfather was actually a garbage man. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I come from that stock. And whatever memory comes to mind, what was your first deal of any type?
Well, okay. First deal I remember, I was 14 years old. I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this. And my sister was actually 15 because my sister's 16 years older than me. She was legal to buy alcohol. So, that's where you start. Some people start playing around with beer and stuff as a freshman in high school. Coerced my sister to get me some booze and I sold it to other students. So it became my first entrepreneurial venture.
I love it. I love it. Alcohol resale. When I was in college, I was the beer. I was one of the student beer distributor reps on campus, and everybody who wanted to get kegs of beer on my side of campus had to go through me. So,
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a really great entrepreneurial venture for me as well. So, Mike, let's jump right in to the new book and what you're talking about now. And I've had a chance to check it out and listen to you on some other stuff. And you know, there's this whole discussion of a Maslow type hierarchy of needs for entrepreneurs. And so, you know, let's jump in there. What's the meat of the new book?
Well, I'll tell you how it came about, because I think that gets the essence of it. I have a list of readers. I still operate businesses today, and I'm always curious what entrepreneurs are facing. So I emailed my readership and said, what's the biggest challenge you have now? This is about 5 years ago. It takes me about 5 years to write a book. And the response came back, but what was interesting is I made a mistake. I double sent that email twice in a row. And some people answered on the same day about the question, what's your biggest challenge you're facing now, with different answers. In the same day, their biggest challenge in their business shifted. It's like, that's what identified what I really believe is the biggest challenge. And the biggest challenge that business owners have is knowing what their biggest challenge is. We're constantly putting out fires. So I wrote Fix This Next to very quickly pinpoint exactly what you need to work on within your business. And it's based upon the interpretation of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, so that's great. So let's get into that a little more, because I'm really resonating with this new content, as I have with your past content. You know, being in the entrepreneurial world, I mean, I've been an entrepreneur since I'm 15, and it's, you know, it's where my clients are, and being around the Entrepreneurs Organization Network, I mean, it's just where I swim. And I think it's so true. I mean, you know, there's this conversation of hustle as an entrepreneur, and, you know, and a lot of people live sort of that hustle life, and they're in reaction to, you know, everything that's going on. So, you know, let's talk about that a little more, and how do people do it a better way?
Yeah. I'm definitely not a fan of hustle and grind. Honestly, if someone's been, you know, grinding and hustling in their business for over a year, they've proven that that model does not work for growth, because you're really stuck in the trap. We have to be very thoughtful. We have to design the outcomes we want, being have clarity on where the business needs to go, and then organize our resources to get there. That's our job. So the business hierarchy of needs is effectively the DNA for a company. It's the makeup of businesses. And when you peel back the outer skin of a business, almost every business is identical. And there's five foundational levels. And like Maslow's hierarchy, the foundational levels not being addressed, we have to revert to it serving that first. I think building a building, you know, if you have a five-story structure, you don't put the fifth story up in thin air, because it'll collapse to the ground. You have to build the foundation first.
Right.
So the five levels are as follows. The foundational level is sales. And sales is the creation of cash. If you know the sales, you have no business whatsoever. So you got to keep that oxygen, if you will, flowing into the business. Well, the next level above that is profit. And profit's the creation of stability for an organization. No profit and your business is on extremely shaky ground. I mean, actually, sadly, I have a friend who had a $250 million business. That was their annual revenue. Everyone I knew was so impressed by his achievements, myself included, until they had one bad move and the business collapsed, because they didn't have a profit model, and the business went under overnight. You know, they employed hundreds and hundreds of employees. It was devastating to them. And the lesson that came out of that is, you can have a massive foundation of sales, one that can support a skyscraper, but if you put a tool shed of profit above it, that profit will collapse within it and the business is not there. So that second level is profit. It must work in relation with sales. You must have adequate profit. Above that is order. Order is a creation of efficiency. And the ultimate asset test is where a business can run it without the owner themselves. Now, if I can leave my business and it continues to grow, then I have a business that doesn't need me, and I have a business that's the ultimate business, because now it's a cash ATM. And if I so choose, I can reinsert myself in the way I want in my business and do what I like to do, or I can, you know, the business can become acquired, and there's tremendous value because people want turnkey businesses. Once you have that, the next level up is called impact. Impact is the creation of transformation. And what I mean by that is, many businesses are in the business of transactions. Some businesses are in the business of transformation, where their transactions are more about, less about the commodity and more about how they're serving people's lives, changing people's lives. One example I use, like Harley Davidson. You can buy a motorcycle from many providers, but you buy a Harley Davidson, your life becomes transformed. You're now part of the family. It has meaning.
Yes.
You're a weekend warrior. And then the highest level is legacy. What I found so fascinating about my research of business owners that have implemented this or have achieved this level is that when the business starts focusing on legacy, the business owner has a realization. And the realization is profound. They were never a business owner in the first place. They've been a business steward. What I mean by that is that they've had a function they had to serve of bringing this business to life, but it's more about the entity, the business itself, than their involvement in it. They're actually insignificant in the big picture. It's about the business doing what it needs to do. And so they kind of release it into time and space for it to continue on to be of service in their absence. Now, the one thing I want to share about this hierarchy is, it is not something that we climb like a ladder. It's something that we will bounce around.
you know, right now as we're recording, as you know, there's a massive pandemic, there's economic collapse. And what this means is for many businesses, what we were selling before isn't selling anymore. And maybe we were working at the transformational levels of impact and legacy, but now maybe we need to refocus on our business and reinvent ourselves, create new sales of stuff that's relevant to the current times. So all businesses of all sizes will live within this hierarchy and always move around up, down at different times based upon what's going on.
That totally makes sense. And listeners, you know, Mike already talked a little bit how this impacts deals in that, you know, the ability to build that company that runs without the owner and build enterprise value separate from the efforts of the owner and have that company be saleable. You know, the other thing that we always talk about is, you know, I always say, listen, too many companies do not take advantage of deal-driven growth, but you need to have sales first. You need to have, you know, you need to be able to sell a service or product before you, I mean, unless you just like a roll-up company, you know, a funded company that's yeah. You know, created to buy other companies. But 99% of the companies out there need to have sales. But everything that you talk about, the ability to create this, you know, this company legacy, et cetera, is also what gets you prepared to be able to do other types of deals, whether it's acquisitions or joint ventures or strategic alliances, because it takes capacity. It takes, you know, everything it takes to be able to run a bigger business and grow and not, you know, have it fall apart as you scale. Is the same thing it takes to do deals.
Yeah, yeah. And it takes reputation. And that's what happens at these high levels. Like, so, you know, we're actually looking to do acquisitions ourselves right now because this is a buyer's market. There's a lot of businesses that sadly are throwing in the towel or said, you know what, I don't want to navigate another challenging period. I'm ready to have my exit.
Yes.
Well, the ones with a powerful brand, which often happens, like everyone on this planet knows Harley Davidson. And even if you've never driven a motorcycle, like I never have, I know the brand, I know what it means and stands for. That's the definition of legacy, is there's this global awareness and it causes this tribe too. Like, you know, I'm in or I'm out, but I know what it means. And that's powerful because that company, when it acquires another company, it now brings the brand to that acquisition target they have. There's power in that. And so we're actually looking to acquire small businesses here because they may not have brand recognition, but they got great tools or systems that we can benefit from. And we then put our brand on top of it. Profit First being a pretty recognized brand now in the small business space. We put our brand on top of that. Well, now it brings a degree of exposure that they have never had before. It becomes a real win-win for us.
Totally, because that brand becomes a value multiplier from day one. Not only in the deal space if you wanted to resell it, which is not really I think what you're looking to do, but also obviously in terms of the ability to grow organically because of the brand recognition. Let me ask you one follow up question on that, and then I want to go back to all the other great content in this new book, Fix This Next. You know, in terms of brands, the conversation of brand has really, I think, changed over the years and certainly in recent times. You know, I think maybe when you and I were growing up, the way a lot of the ways that a company developed a brand was by doing a lot of TV advertising.
Sure.
Right. And it was just sort of, you know, repetition and getting the message out there, whatever. And I believe, you know, there's one of my highest values is authenticity. And I believe that there's been a requirement that's come much more in the market for brands to be more authentic and not to just say a lot of stuff and really have that model back it up. So yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so my thought is the brands of yesteryear was built around awareness, and awareness was achieved through frequency, right? The more frequently a name got in front of me, the more aware I was, even if I didn't have experience around it. Now brands are built through reputation because how I hear from a brand is not, you know, it used to be you sit in front of the television watching Gilligan's Island or something, and then it goes to commercial break and you hear the same message over and over again. So they achieve frequency. Now it's through all these different inputs. So now when I hear of a brand, if 15 or 20 people say it to me through social media or whatever way we're communicating, that is the new form of exposure. So there's like these little mini individual commercials, but they're also backed with people's experience, right? So someone says, you know, I use such and such and I love it is different than that company saying, use our product. The new form of branding is really reputation. Do you have a reputation for excellence? And you don't even need a massive community. Small brands can build reputation and have awareness built very quickly just because they are providing in an excellent form, in an excellent way, high quality or high degree of integrity or other elements. That's a blend. So your reputation truly precedes you as a brand today.
Yeah, no question. And listen, on the flip side, it's it's also on the extreme now that if you misstep, if you are a Shake Shack and you take $10 million on the PPP program, which you can argue, I did a video on this, which you can argue to some extent they were, if they didn't miscalculate the pushback,
to some extent, they were sort of ethically obligated to take free money, you know, or cheap money from the government for their shareholder value. But the reason it was a misstep is they totally anticipate the pushback and the blowback that came, and then they quickly made a decision otherwise. So on the other side, it's a different ballgame than it used to be as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's how quickly the word spreads around. So, yeah, I heard of the Shake Shack situation, and it really, that could be a death blow to them because now they're seen as greedy mongers. Now, if you look at it at a logical basis, they actually have an obligation to take that money just as much as any other business because it's the same footing, right? If they don't take it now, they have a $10 million disadvantage. So technically, it was the right move. But when it comes to your reputation, brand awareness now, you know, what brands are stuck is, are based on is reputation. It's a devastating move. So I think the CFO made the right move. The CMO made the totally wrong move.
Right.
Maybe the CMO wasn't even involved. And I think it may be a devastating move for them.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting way to put it.
Let's take a break from the show for a minute so I can tell you about an incredible resource my team and I have put together for you. Secrets of Deal-Driven Growth, Creative Ways to Grow Your Business, Even in Challenging Times, is a powerful ebook that helps you take DealQuest podcast episodes and apply them to your own life and business. This is the ideal tool for anyone looking for creative ways to grow as dealmakers, and you can get yours now. It's as easy as heading to coreycupfer.com/workbook and downloading your copy. While you're there, you can also consider joining our dynamic, deal-driven community of founders, experts, small business owners, and entrepreneurs. Now back to the show.
So, Mike, listen, let's talk a little bit more about Fix This Next. I mean, I'm one of those people who is going to read it just because it's your book. Can I read it? but for those readers, those listeners who are maybe a little less familiar with you, whatever,
sure.
You know, in addition, tell us what else, who it's targeted to. I mean, it's entrepreneurs, you know, anybody more specifically, and then also what else in addition to this hierarchy needs that they're going to get out of the book.
Yeah, I dare say this is the best work of my life. I really, really assessed what this challenge was. And what it's targeted toward is any business owner or leader who feels that they're in the business of putting out fires, that we have this kind of recurring Groundhog's Day where we come in with a plan to work that morning or nowadays at home, but we go into email and it just repeats over and over. Crisis management. If you're in crisis management, that this book is for you. Or any business that's hit a ceiling, like, you know, we hit a revenue ceiling or we can't hire employees or we seem to get stuck and have a recurring pattern. That's what I wrote the book for. And what I discovered is between every action and reaction, we need thoughtful contemplation, but many business owners and leaders don't do that. There's something that happens and we react by our gut instinct. I found that this isn't serving entrepreneurs and business leaders well because while we're biologically wired into ourselves, like if I'm walking down a dark alley and I feel like some harm's going to come upon me, I should turn around because I am biologically wired into me. So my gut instinct is very valuable there. But our business, we're not wired into it yet. Many of us just simply say, trust our gut. And that's the wrong move. So Fix This Next is a really simple tool or compass, if you will, to move in the exact direction your business needs. If you want to know the one thing you need to do, it's going to be within that business hierarchy of needs. And in the book, I have a simple series of questions. It's about 25 questions that you can very rapidly evaluate where you are. And it's not just a sales problem, as an example. Within sales, there's these different elements that make up all businesses. There's, of course, prospecting and conversion. There's a thing called lifestyle congruence that so many people miss out on, and other elements. And you just evaluate starting at the base up, just like you would in Maslow's hierarchy, see what needs are in that level of sales and in profit and so forth that have gone unsatisfied. And then once you identify when it's unsatisfied, the system makes you identify which one becomes the most vital need. Now you concentrate your efforts on resolving the one thing. There's always multiple elements going on. So while you focus on sales, you have to have some degree of order. You know, you have to have it organized in some degree. You can't ignore profit. But the thing is, we don't put equal treatment to each category. Keep the other things in the ballpark, but we concentrate our efforts on resolving that foundational need, really fix it so we can build upon it. So it will sequence what you need to do when.
Love that. So listen, you mentioned the lifestyle congruence concept, and I really want to get into this because I've heard you talk about it. I see it in the book. And for me, I sort of got on a little rant at some point a couple of years ago where, you know, it's not usually my style, but, you know, in the entrepreneurial world, there's always this push to, you know, grow and scale and, you know, do all this stuff. And I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I look to scale my business, but a lot of times it comes from, in my mind, sort of the wrong place, right? And people, you know, whether it's ego, whether it's outside forces, whether it's, you know, whatever, and they get to a place where they built this big business and they're totally, you know, their life is a mess, so they're totally unhappy. Yeah. And for me, I sort of wanted to redefine, you know, and on the flip side, lifestyle business is, it's like a curse, you know, it's like a diss, you know, to say somebody has a lifestyle business. And sort of my thing was, we need to redefine lifestyle business, that every business, if you're an entrepreneur, why are you an entrepreneur? Why are you not working with somebody? You know, and everybody should be creating a lifestyle business, meaning that it fits their lifestyle. Now, if that is a venture-funded company that's going to expand around the world, and that's truly who you are and what you want, that's great. That's your lifestyle business.
Yeah.
That was sort of my take on it. But you talk to me about lifestyle and tell our listeners about lifestyle congruence, because I'm really...
Yeah, so there's this keep up with the entrepreneur Joneses mentality.
Yes.
And I've always had small businesses. My biggest company ever was a $7 million run about halfway into the year when we were acquired by a Fortune 500. And that's my biggest ever. That's a small business. And what I found is, what really was motivating me to grow that and achieve the bigger top line numbers was because my friends that I was hanging out with had bigger numbers. I remember, you know, bragging when I had my first $1 million business, like I had a million, which admittedly was probably doing about 800,000.
Right.
Did some entrepreneurial rounding, you know? And then my friend's like, I got a $2 million business. And I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I got to keep up with this. And it became this perverted top line focus. And the businesses that I ran, admittedly, were not financially healthy. Well, what lifestyle congruence is, calculating what gives you comfort in your life. There's some numbers specifically, but there's also just lifestyle. So, you know, I need, just picking a random number, $100,000 a year, and it supports comfort for me. Now, we're not looking for aspiration, you're just comfort. But once you know that number for your personal life as a business owner, then you say, how many sales or how much do I need in sales for my business to actually support that? And the number is often much different than the entrepreneur Jones's random number. So some businesses, you know, if you have a $500,000 or $600,000 business, you're living a perfect lifestyle. That's amazing. And you can really maximize that business, and the demand on you might be very low. Well, that business to me is way more impressive than a, you know, $250 million business goes out of business and the stress my friend was experiencing. So the right size business will find you when you understand what you want for yourself.
So, Mike, this brings me to a topic that I love. You know, I don't always ask this question, but folks like you who've really studied this and experienced it yourself, and, you know, it's always interesting to me about getting into the deeper conversation about people's just mental outlook, about their limiting beliefs, about sort of the internal work that has some entrepreneurs and some people in general in their lives, but some entrepreneurs be able to, you know, make the shifts to recognize some of the things you're talking about, and some of them can't. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, on that? Because we're so trained as entrepreneurs to get the outside information and learn skills. But I think I'm a big believer on the, the level of our personal growth is totally tied into the level of our business success.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know if I have too much significant insight, but the biggest insight for me when it came to kind of personalization is that my business, I suspect your business, Corey, actually businesses really are the ultimate platform for self-expression. So what I did was I really investigated my own life, and I find there's three trigger moments. And I should say, ironically, interestingly, you brought up right in the beginning. So there's three moments that I think can define us, and then our business can be an expression of it. So one is, it's called big T trauma. Big T trauma is where there's a moment, something happens where it impacts us to such a degree that we say, this will never happen again to myself or others, or this defines us in a new empowering way. Now, trauma can be packaged pretty badly, you know, some kind of abuse or something, or an accident. For me, it was financial loss, devastating financial loss because of just my own ignorance. And it wasn't like, by the way, the next morning I woke up and said, I got this figured out and I got a purpose now. I went through a couple years of depression and drinking way too hard, but it became the seedling for what I do. The other kind of method or launch point is small T's, small trauma. That's the drip campaigns against us. Like, you're picked on in grade school for year after year. And we finally accumulate to the point where we say, we're going to make the stance. This will never happen again.
Yeah.
And then the last kind of platform expression is those childhood dreams. And that was why it's so interesting that you brought that right away, where it's like, I always wanted to be this or do this or experience this. And today's my declaration. And so now I'm a little bit of me thinking, wow, what if I started like a refuse company? Like, maybe I should get the garbage. So I think that is, when we explore that and we really lean into that, that's our defining character. A lot of these business owners become unstoppable, because I'll tell you, anyone can go into business to make money. But the second someone goes into a business because that's their love, that's their passion, that's their calling, I will bet money on that person over the other person anytime.
100%. 100%. So, Mike, before I ask you my last question, what's the best place for people to find out more about you and your books and everything that
companies
all that you do?
Yeah, one place to go is fixthisnext.com. I set that page to have a free evaluation. So I talked about those 25 questions. We set up, you can do it online. So if you go to fixthisnext.com, it says free evaluation, take it. You don't have to download anything. It'll present it right on the screen, and it'll immediately pinpoint what you need to do in your business right now, and you can get busy working on it.
Folks, definitely check it out. If you don't know Mike's work, like I said, I'm a big fan. So, you know, go, if you didn't write that down, it'll be in the show notes, easy to find. So definitely check it out. So Mike, my final question here on the podcast is, you know, my highest value in life is freedom. And that ranges from freedom from all people in the world, from oppression and that kind of stuff, to the reason I'm an entrepreneur, right? I want to create freedom in my life, flexibility. I want to control my destiny. So what does freedom mean to you, and how does it impact the work you do?
Freedom means to me as it is the ability to influence others, the ability to serve others the way I feel called to do it, as opposed to feeling that I have to follow some specific protocol or approach. As I did make discoveries, the ability to share it and to be of service to people in my own unique way, to me, that's freedom, because that is the ultimate form of expression, in my opinion.
Love it. Mike Michalowicz, I so appreciate you having you on the show.
Thank you, brother. It was fun being here.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Deal Quest, where we help you understand how deal-driven growth can be your ticket to freedom. I want to invite you to a unique way to tap into the wisdom and experience of the DealQuest community. The Deal Den is a place where entrepreneurs, high-level executives, and business leaders come together, support each other's growth and success, and share what's working best, as well as what challenges we are facing right now. You will get input not only from me, but from all of our members. We collaborate and serve each other. Join us, go to CoreyKupfer.com/DealDen. I'll see you there. I'm Corey Kupfer. Until next week, wishing you the freedom and financial prosperity that I know your deal quest will bring.